Speaker. Thanks, Michael. Thank you. Much better. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Friday Night Dharma Loka. My name's Drew, and I'm the president. And tonight, after a two-week absence, we have the return of Ajahn Brahm, and in support, one of our new novice monks, Venerable Posado. A few notices tonight. We have another novice ordination on Saturday, tomorrow at 5 p.m. at the centre. So one of the Anagarikas, Simon, will be becoming a monk tomorrow at 5 o'clock. So you're welcome to come down and watch the ceremony. The entry to the rain ceremony for Dharmasara, for the nuns, that's on this Sunday, 10th of July. I believe it starts at 10 o'clock, if you turn up at 10 o'clock. And then the ceremony finishes at 12:30. There's a lunch in between. And if it's not hailing, which it's supposed to be tomorrow, there'll be a bushwalk. There's no Sutta class on this Sunday, one schedule, but it's not on. The entry to the rain ceremony for the monks at Bodhinyana is next Sunday, same time, 10 o'clock. 17th. That's right. This Sunday's the 10th, next Sunday the 17th. Parking, everyone's doing a good job of parking. If we could just keep it up and make sure that when we park on the verge of the park, Nansen Park, we get three cars between the trees. It matters so we can keep cars off the road and keep the residents happy. Can I ask that if you're a slave to one of these, like me, that you can please turn it off for our meditation? Bad karma. If it goes off while you're meditating, you have to start all over again. And finally tonight, we're taking some new photos for the new website, and we wanted to take some photos of the audience with Ajahn Brahm. So we took some photos before, but they didn't quite work out because we've got the space between the monks and the line for live streaming. So just for tonight, we're going to break the rules and encourage everyone to move forward just a little bit. So when we take the photos for the website, it looks quite good. If you don't want to be in the photo, then perhaps you could sit up the back. So can I encourage everyone just to come forward 3 metres, and I'll also move a bit forward as well. No, Ajahn, you're fine. You're at the centre of the universe there, where the planet's coming in.
Very good.
There we go. You'll be famously immortalised on our new website when it's launched in a few months, on the bottom of the page.
Wow.
Brilliant.
This is fun.
Excellent. So Boontan's promised that he'll only take one photo, no photos during the meditation, but he'll because the camera's quite loud and it's got a flash. I thought I was getting enlightened last week because the flash was going off while I was meditating, but it was just Boone with his camera. So Boone will take the photos during the talk. And without much further ado, I hand it over to Ajahn Brahm. Thank you.
Very good. So please also, no levitating during the photograph session. So we want to keep everybody in focus and not... So now is a wonderful time to meditate and just to find some peace and quiet in your life. So in order to meditate, all it is physical and mental relaxation, coming to a state of stillness. And once the body and the mind, you find peace. But also we get a beautiful happiness of peace. At last, nothing is worrying us. At last, the mind could recharge. About that, angry, grumpy, and they'd have no happiness, no joy. So we learn how to relax our body, relax our mind. And we find that we have this great clarity, peace and happiness come. So we start, just eyes closed and being aware of our physical body. There's many good reasons why it's important to start with your bodily feelings. Number one, you have to live in your body for the next half an hour, and if the body gets aching or hurting, it's going to cause a lot of distraction to your meditation. So, first of all, just check your butt, your bottom, on the chair or on the cushion. Is it comfortable? How does it feel? This is first piece of mindfulness coming up. Be aware, be mindful of feelings in your bottom. And then see if you need to adjust your bottom on the cushion, on the chair, otherwise known as fidget. Fidgeting has a very useful purpose. As you fidget, you are aware of the change in the feeling in your bottom. Until you fidget, the most comfortable. So, when you fidget, so you can find. You do that at the beginning, you don't have to worry later on. And then check out your legs. If they're crossed, if you're sitting on the floor, or if they're dangling over the edge of the chair, do they need to be adjusted? Do not take them for granted. Observe them. Mindful of the feelings in the legs. And ask the question, can I make my legs, my feet more comfortable? If you can, do so. This is mindfulness combined with kindness, what I call kindfulness. Then you check your back. Make sure it's not too tight, not too loose. You can lean back if you need to, lean forward if that's more comfortable. Find the best position for your back. Always being aware of the feeling sensations in that part of your body, which allows you to have the feedback to find the best position. Once the back is comfortable, check the arms and the hands. How are they? Again, don't assume that this is the best position for you. Move. Adjust. Because the posture is that all the time you're aware and you know if you feel more comfortable or less comfortable. This is an important skill. Position of position. Let's check your head. Balanced on top of the shoulders. And also be aware of the sensations around the eyes and the mouth. If you are tense, those muscles scrunch up, you can feel their tightness. You're mindful, and you soon learn how to relax the tension and relax muscles around the eyes and the mouth. By will, you choose to relax. And you can be aware the feeling around the eyes and the mouth does change. Can feel they are relaxing, getting loose, at ease. It's amazing how many people get headaches. Yeah. Now we go to, there must be some part of your body. You probably guess my throat is a bit itchy. I'm going to my throat now, zooming in like on Google Maps, focusing on one part of your body which is irritating or painful. It may be your knees or your back, maybe. Fill your mind with it. This is what I mean by zooming in. Really get to know the sensation, not by giving it names, but by just being aware as possible of that irritating feeling. And you will notice it does change. Pain throbs. It gets worse, it gets better. Irritation sometimes gets more itchy, sometimes less. Be mindful of the change in that sensation. Any irritating, painful, itchy part of your body. And then experiment with changing your attitudes. When you look at that irritating, painful feeling with a mind of letting be, opening the door of your heart and embracing that feeling, even welcoming it, being kind to it, you find the ache, the pain, the irritation will get less. You're discovering a way to relax a small part of the body which is irritating you. First it eases off a little bit. You'll find the feeling, the mindfulness gives you the feedback showing you the feeling decreases in intensity. By trial and error, using mindfulness, you learn how to relax an irritating part of your body. Knowing the sensation and knowing how to ease it, relax it. Sometimes I use an analogy. I feel that this part of my body is like a string being stretched. Imagine both ends letting go. And the part of that body which is irritating, loosening. The stress, the strain reducing, even disappearing. Until the string becomes loose, no tightness on it at all. It's called relaxation. Ease. No pressure. No force. No stress. And imagine my throat just as if it was sinking into a soft cotton pillow. With an aching pressure. No force. The mindfulness, the feedback from mindfulness, showing all of the irritations and pain decreasing and decreasing. And it feels good. I'm aware of physical feelings, and they're getting more and more comfortable. For me, the irritation in my throat is getting less. Just aware, being kind. It's not so itchy. Usually once one area of my body has been dealt with and it feels at ease, no longer a problem, I go to another area of my places which need attention. Go to part of your body on an irritant part of your problem. So feel you can be by willpower, mindfulness and the feedback from mindfulness. You learn. Aware of the feeling and aware of what makes it feel more comfortable, more at ease. I continue until my body feels totally relaxed, nothing being held tight. Same feeling as when I first wake up in the morning. Comfortable, cozy, tingling. Not a stress to be. It's what mindfulness can do. It teaches you, it gives you the feedback so you can learn. You're mindful of the feelings in the body. And from that you learn how to relax. And once my body is relaxed, emotional world, how irritated is your mind? Or how relaxed is your mind? A relaxed mind is called peace. An irritated mind is called restless. If you were to give a number from 1 to 10, how restless you were right now, what number would it be? Now, see what you need to bring that number down, to become more relaxed, at peace with the world. To be at peace with the sound of the rain. To be at peace with your past and future. To be at ease in this present moment. Just feeling how tense your mind is and using mindfulness and its feedback to learn how to make your mind less and less tense. Not fighting this moment, but embracing it, making peace in the door of your heart. The sound of the rain, the warmth of the room, the sound of my voice. Not fighting, but relaxing with whatever's in your mind right now. Now, how agitated is your mind, giving it a number from 1 to 10? Is it decreasing? Less agitated? More at ease? More peaceful? If it's getting more peaceful, carry on. Before we even start to look at things like the breath, we need to relax our body. once the mind is reasonably peaceful, before you go thinking too much, see if you can become aware of your breathing. Are you breathing in? Breathing out right now? And how do you know? What is the sensation of feeling which tells you what the breath is doing? Breathing in peace. Or if you're sick, breathing in health, energy, life. And as you breathe out, let go. And imagine what you're letting go of. Sickness, tiredness, stress. Visualize it as if it's breathing in peace, health, energy. Breathe out. And don't just say the words. Feel as much as you meaning. The more you can feel their meaning, peace, let go, the more peace will grow inside of you with every in-breath. And the more irritations, stress will leave you. Breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go. Breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go. So how does your mind feel right now? How peaceful is it? How relaxed is the body? Body and mind. And after a while, increase it so much, your mind becomes So in a very short while I'll be ringing the gong. The third ringing of the gong starts to disappear. That is the signal to come out from the meditation and open your eyes. At the third ringing of the gong. There we go. Oh, another nice meditation. I'm really glad I learnt meditation when I was young. Best thing I ever did. So please get yourselves nice and comfortable. It's nice having people sitting much closer. It gives, you know, for a speaker, it gives much more atmosphere the closer you are to people. And recently, when was it? Last May. 2-3 months ago now. Crikey, that went quick. I went to Melbourne. And the first talk was at Melbourne Uni. And I made a big mistake. The Buddhist Society of Melbourne University has my talk. I do that. Because so many people came. About 1/4 hour before the talk started, all the seats were taken. So they started sitting in the aisles. And soon all the aisles were taken. So they sat on the stage, or the well where I was supposed to speak. Until right all around me, just was people sitting all over the place. And then the professor came in, the head of the Buddhist Society. He couldn't even get in the door. And even the security, who were going bananas, because we were breaking all the fire restrictions, they couldn't even get through the door to throw us out. But it was great atmosphere, because when there's everybody packed in there, it really brings up a nice feeling that you're actually close to people. The worst is actually giving talks, and you're on some stage way up there, and people are so distant from you. Because when they're distant physically, it's hard to really connect and listen and feel people when you're giving the talk. Anyway, so it's great. The closer, the better. Up to a point. So anyway, for the subject of tonight's talk, again, just always thinking of something new to talk about, and if you've given as many talks as I've given, and they're all online or recorded, it's really hard to find a new subject. But just in the office in Bodhinyana Monastery today, looking at some magazine, there was a word on it, and I thought, wow, what a great subject for a talk. Courage. So tonight's talk is on courage. And you think, what's that really got to do with Buddhism? If there's any out-and-out Buddhist here, it's one of the words which is often used in Buddhism. I'm not going to go too scholastic, but I'm going to just show that I know what I'm talking about, because people think I make this up. This is straight down the line, Buddha's teachings. There's a word they call virya, which many people think is effort and energy. But it's much more than that. And in fact, even calling it courage is not a bad description of this word. It comes from a root meaning vira, which is like heroic stuff. The word is actually a hero. And a hero only becomes a hero if you have this beautiful courage, and your acts, body, speech is courageous. Now that is much closer to this idea of virya than effort. Because effort is something which has caused so much problem in people's lives. It makes you so tense. You've been trying so hard in all your life. And surely, how can you be peaceful if you have to make so much effort? That's what you do all during the day. All during the week, at least when you can come to here, you can relax. And that's the opposite of effort. So this is courage. And the courage, just thinking of way how I can talk about courage, I'm going to put it into 4 places. The courage of living your life. and the courage of letting go in life, dying. And the courage in meditation, and one of the most powerful ones, the courage in your wisdom, in a search for wisdom. Because each one of these does need a lot of courage. But the first one, the courage in your life. We always have to make many decisions in our life. And I mentioned this before, it's a powerful teaching. When you make decisions, many people are so afraid that they don't make a decision, they keep putting it off. It's called procrastination. I always thought of starting a society for procrastinators, but I've never got around to it. That's terrible. Okay, when it comes to bad jokes, 3 weeks ago, last time I was here, somebody told me this joke, and I made a note of it to tell this on the next Friday night talk. For two Friday nights, has it been joke-free? Try some jokes. Three attempts, so I'm sure that after I tell this joke, you wish he was back again. I'm not sure if you saw in the news today about the kidnapping in school. Don't worry about it, because the kid's woken up now. The kid napping in school. Oh, come on. That's a kid's joke. That's why the kids get it first, and you guys get it later on. Anyway, so when it comes to making decisions, we're afraid. And afterwards, we don't know what to do next. And this is a teaching I've said before, but it's powerful. So remember, whatever decision you make in life, it doesn't really matter. Marry this guy, marry that girl, get this job, do that job. Because what really matters is what you do after you make the decision. That is the crucial part. I want you to understand that. This is one example that to have a success in life, it doesn't matter about willpower. It's more about the wisdom power and the kindness power. That is what really drives you in life. And that is what courage actually is all about. You're not courageous because you make these decisions. You're wise and you're kind. The wisdom shows you what decision making is all about. And again, it really doesn't matter which decision you make. It's what you do after you make that decision. You choose a career. To be a monk, to be a businesswoman, to be a bus driver. You know, it doesn't really matter if you're a bus driver or you're a monk. What really matters is how you drive that bus. And how you make something out of that career. How you actually welcome everybody who comes onto your bus with a smile. Welcome, madam. Thank you for coming on my bus today. I really hope you have a wonderful journey on my bus. Do bus drivers actually do that these days? So cough up the money and get to the back. But it does make a lot of difference. Every now and again, you actually do see someone who takes a simple job and makes it special. And I can't go past when I was in London and being driven early in the morning to the airport at the time when the school children were going to school. And they had one of these people, we used to call them lollipop ladies. Instead of having the flags like they have here in Australia, to stop the traffic so the children can cross safely, you know, across the road, they had this big, I call it a lot, like a big circular sign on a pole. And this lady, when she was walking across the road to stop the traffic, she wasn't walking, she was doing hip-hop with her pole. I never knew what pole dancing was before, but I guess this was it. Monks don't go to nightclubs, thank goodness. This is the closest we do. This is a club and it's a night time. Does this count as a nightclub? Okay, it's got bouncers over there, so I suppose it's got something which is close to a nightclub. But anyway, she was doing a dance, you know, with a stick. Imagine that happened in Australia. These people who take the kids across the road with their flags, they were waving their flags up and down and doing a nice jig. That made me so happy that morning, and everybody else, no matter what they were doing the night before, they had a boost of energy when somebody did that job with that extra effort and happiness. It caused happiness to everybody. And that is why, no matter what job you do in life, you can always add that little bit more happiness in the life just by just adding a bit more energy. So what I'm saying here is, no matter what decision you make in life, what career, it's what you do after that. Yeah, you get married, or you stay single, which is the best? It doesn't really matter. What matters is what you do after you decide to be single. What you do after you decide to have a partner and commit together. That is what is crucial in life. So that means we don't worry about sort of what decisions we make. People think it's so courageous. You just go in there and do things. You make your decisions. You're going to change your career and do something really weird. You're going to go and I don't know what else you're going to do in life. You're going to start a new business. Whatever it is you're going to do. Is it courageous? Really, it is wise and kind to yourself and to others. When you put that into whatever you're doing, what many people think is courage is just what wisdom and kindness. So you make your decisions and then you make it work. Now, of course, we have the fear of making the decision, first of all, and then we have the fear afterwards, oh, what if it goes wrong? What if we can't live together? What if he turns out to be a psychopath? What if... It does not matter. You're going to die anyway. And I shouldn't say that. Please take that out of the talk. I'll get in trouble again. No, there's always something you can do. And the point is that that is very, very, very unlikely to happen. And most of the times, yeah, you do have difficulties, say in a marriage, difficulties in a job, but that's where you learn. And that's where you grow. Because the reason why we are not courageous in making decisions is because we're afraid of making mistakes. Now that making mistakes business is just needs a PR makeover. Mistakes. Because when most people make mistakes, they hide them. They don't admit them. They say, no, it wasn't me. I wasn't to blame. No, somebody else. I didn't do that. No. Mistakes are cool. Mistakes rock. Mistakes. See, I'm speaking somebody's language here. Mistakes are brilliant. The reason is because it's when you make mistakes, that is where growth happens. That's where you learn. If you never made a mistake in life, what use would life be? There'd be no growing at all. When we make a mistake, we realize, I did that wrong. Why? Do it better next time. And that's where we learn and grow. So, unfortunately, we live in a world where you are not allowed to make mistakes. If you make mistakes, you're told off and sent into the naughty corner or round the back. That's why all the people in the back of this hall, they're all sent to the back because they're naughty. We don't do that in a temple or in any wise place. Mistakes are encouraged. Because what they do, when you encourage mistakes, you encourage learning and growth and doing better next time. Not admitting mistakes, discouraging them, hiding them, suppressing them. What does that do to you? That makes you feel awful. I made a mistake, I can't tell anybody, I feel terrible about it. That just puts down your sense of self-esteem. So instead we allow mistakes to happen. They're learning, great. And then we get what I heard from a powerful business people. I get up to do some really good gigs sometimes. One of the best gigs I ever did was get this all-paid trip to Hayman Island. Hayman Island in this beautiful six-star resort in the Great Barrier Reef. All sent there to give a few little talks on meditation to all these big shots It was the, at that time, Prime Minister, what was his name? I forget now, it was Gillard and the other one, Rudd. Rudd was there, Gillard was there, Anna Bligh from Queensland, and the Victorian Premier, and all these other big shots were there. And the reason I get to go there, and you know, was because you know you can actually talk to people and influence people. Actually, I was this little fellow over here. You know, he put the article in the newspaper about not being influential or being influential. But I did actually find I am actually influential, because for many years now, you probably heard me teach this here. When I was talking about democracy, I was saying it's not really working. We just had an election. People are not really happy. And I said one of the reasons why, and the same is in UK, where they had the Brexit vote. A lot of people are really upset. And one of the reasons is because the democracy is slanted. It's not fair. And I was looking at just the way, just to make it interesting, the way that you vote, say, in a company, in a business. The more shares you have in that business, the more votes you have. That's fair enough. You've got more of a commitment to that business, more of investment. If you have like $1 million of shares in that company, of course you should have much more of a say than someone who's got just $10. That's logic. That's fair. That makes sense. So when you apply the same standards to democracy, why should old people who've only got maybe another 10 years left in this world, why should they have the same vote as a young person who's got 60 or 70 years stake in life? Should not. Take an obvious example, like climate change. The climate change. Oh, the people, the senior people in our government, they won't be here when the, as they say, the SHIT, it's a fad with climate change, when the sea levels rise or whatever, they won't be here. They'd be dead and gone. And all the young people, they're the ones who have to pay the consequences. So why is it that old people who are soon out of here, why do they have to have the same vote as young people who will face the consequences, you know, of the decisions which our leaders make? Surely we should slant it towards more votes, the younger you have, the more shares you have in life, the more votes you should have. And I thought that was a nice radical idea, and somebody wrote an article on that in the Melbourne Age. I'm becoming influential, so just watch this space. A few more years, they've already amended the way the Senate is voted. Now, the next thing will be the Ajahn Brahm form of democracy. Who knows? But it's interesting. But that's why you throw out ideas and see actually what happens. Amazing. When you think outside the box, sometimes ideas actually gel. And people say, why? Why not? Let's make this a better system. And I think, you know, as an old guy, I think it makes a lot more sense. I think, and that would actually change a lot of the decisions which are made, you know, by our governments. If the younger people actually have more weight to their votes. Anyway, when it gets back to like making mistakes, at this conference over in Hayman Island, one of the big shots over there, he always used to say, there's no such thing as failure. Forward failure, he called it. FF, forward failure. Which means when you do something, you're not so afraid to make a mistake because it's always forward failure. You never actually just fail. There's always a positive to it. Which means you do have more courage to try new things. Because, yeah, you fail, but you learn from it. Well done. Next time you do better. And that is something which I would love to actually to have more in our schools and universities, giving people more of a chance to be inventive, to research, develop, innovate. Why don't people innovate in their life and do new things in a different way? Because they're scared. So a long time ago, I gave you gave people here the first instruction, a practical lesson on how to innovate. Tomorrow morning or this evening, say this evening, before you go to bed, I hope you brush your teeth. When you brush your teeth, have you ever been mindful enough to notice what part of the teeth you start brushing first? Is it the top left-hand corner, or is it the middle bottom, or the right corner? Which one do you start first? This evening, try starting at a different place. If you always start on the left, go to the right. Live on the wild side. Do things differently. Don't always do the same. That is stagnation. That is being dead. That's like being an automaton, like being a robot, just doing it the same way every time. That means there is no learning. There is no growth. And have you seen that that's what most people do? Because they're afraid of making mistakes. This has worked all the time. It's going to work again, and I'm afraid of doing things wrong. Now, when we have courage, we usually try new things. Do it a different way. Yeah, many times you fail. But even when you fail, you learn. And every now and again, you find the perfect place to start brushing your teeth. You may not have done it yet. Experiment. You don't know what you're missing out on in life. That's just going a bit over the top. But you can see that what I'm saying here is have the courage to try. Make mistakes. That's part of life. Because the fear of making mistakes, that is what stunts our growth. That is the opposite of courage. And why do we be afraid of making mistakes? Again, we're so afraid what other people think of us. That's one of the great things of being a monk or a nun, wearing robes like this. You can't be afraid what other people think of you, because they think some weird things of you all the time. Many times, goes a nice old story. In North Perth, 31 years ago, we had our little centre there. We've grown a lot since then, and so have I. And it's just growth, that's all. But anyway, expanding. We've expanded. So have I. So when, that's why that my new name, I've been telling this out, because sometimes, should you address you? Is it Ajahn Brahm? And I've been Ajahn Brahm for too long already. So I've got my new name. Ajahn Donut. Because donut, what is a donut? Number one, it's round. That fits. It's nice and sweet and delicious. That's true. And it's holy inside. That's me. Ajahn Donut. So, isn't it nice to make people laugh? That's really what you come here for anyway. So anyway, then, when you're courageous enough to try something new, even a new name, yeah, you make mistakes sometimes, but that's actually where we learn, and that's actually where we push boundaries of life to make it better, make your life better. So the fear, especially what other people think of you, what they say of you, I'll let them think whatever they like. That's their problem. Your problem, actually, North Perth that time, when he was, I was loading up the van. He had an old combi van full of building material when we were building Bodhinyana Monastery down at Serpentine. And this 13-year-old girl came out. Oh, I can picture her now. She came out. She'd never seen a Buddhist monk before. She didn't know what I was. But, you know, she came up and she put her hands on her hips like this. I don't know where she learned this, from the movies or somewhere. And she looked me up and down with as much disgust as a 13-year-old girl could possibly manage to conjure up. She looked me up and down and said to me, I'm trying to imitate her, "You're dressed like a girl. That is sick." She was trying her best to upset me, but it was so funny, I just burst out laughing. I always remember that. But she was true. A skirt and stuff. But anyway, now you get all sorts of stuff. I know the other time, I'm not sure when I told this story last of all, I was visiting my family in England. And I have some family in the Midlands of England, in a town called Stoke-on-Trent. I got my, it's where my mother sort of came from. And anyway, in the morning I was with a cousin, just going for a walk. It was a beautiful sunny day, let's get some exercise. So I went for a walk, and you know what? As I was walking down the road, just talking to my cousin, all these people were pointing at me and laughing. I've never had that before. Yeah, I've had abuse and people saying all sorts of rude things, but never actually pointing and laughing at me. And I couldn't figure out what it was. Why are people always laughing and pointing at me whenever they saw me walking down the road? And then I finally found out the reason. When we came to this big billboard, this big sign, circus in town. And I finally figured out they thought I was one of the clowns from the circus. And that's why I was just creating a bit of happiness. I thought one of the clowns was going out for a walk from the circus. It wasn't a clown, it was a Buddhist monk. But I can understand the mistake. But you're not concerned what other people think. If you make a mistake, if you laugh, what I learned, if you make a mistake and people laugh at you, you laugh as well. And then the world never laughs at you. It only laughs with you. What a beautiful message that was. You make a mistake, people start laughing, you laugh as well. Then the world never laughs at you, it only laughs with you. Totally different. So that means we're courageous in life to give it a try, make mistakes, otherwise you always regret it in the end. The end of your life, the end of the, oh, I wish I'd have tried that, oh, I wish I'd have done that. So, obviously, just with some wisdom, I mean, don't try doing stupid things, like, you know, courageously going to Syria to try and sort out the problems in the Middle East. Not even I would do that. Although, when's the last, did I tell that story? It was, apparently somebody saw this on Q&A, the Q&A TV program on a Monday night. I've never seen that, but every now and again people actually hear something on that program. And this was a program about the problems in the Middle East and the wars and the terrorism and stuff going on there. And they had, one of the presenters there was the editor of the Spectator magazine, a very influential magazine in England. And they asked him what was his solution, or give some advice, try and stop the violence in the Middle East, in Syria and Iraq and all the bombings and stuff which go on. And he said, he quoted, there had been a study done in Sussex University in the UK, that when people were meditating, even for 7 minutes, they said, everybody in the vicinity also calmed down and became peaceful and less violent, less aggressive. Just actually a few people meditating had calmed everybody else down. So this guy on TV, on ABC, said his solution was getting a few Buddhist monks and parachuting them into Syria. That would solve the problem. And when someone suggested, have you got any volunteers? I said, I can suggest a few monks in my monastery. I'd like to parachute in. That's being very mean and nasty. I would never do that. But anyway, it is true that you do have an effect on other people. So if you, obviously don't be stupid, but also just, you know, feel your heart. Never follow fear when you make decisions. Follow wisdom and kindness and a bit more courage when you're making decisions. And of course, I'm going to get on to the other three courageous things. Encourage facing your death. We're all going to die someday, as you all know. As for me, I always think if I eat too much more health food, which I don't, by the way, but if I did, all it would mean is a few extra years in the old people's home. And I think, is that really worth it? No, it's not just that. It is also when you are worried about anything, which is the opposite, afraid of things. Have you ever noticed these things tend to happen to you? Whatever you're afraid of, actually attract to you. And if you're afraid of losing your job, you get so tense at work, you find out that you're a terrible person to live with, and you find out you do lose your job. You spend more time worrying about it than doing your work. Same in relationships. If you're with someone you're really attached to, you're so terrified that they may leave you one day. You're so tense, controlling, because of fear. They can't stand you any longer and they do leave you. You find out what you're afraid of, you can understand you actually make happen. Even like being afraid of death. That's actually you make it happen much more early than it would otherwise, just through fear. I learned this a long time ago when I was reading a book, the sort of stupid books I read as a young man, Edgar Allan Poe. Really weird. He was actually crazy. He was really psychopathic, that guy, I think, because he had those really weird little stories. And one of the stories was The Mask of the Red Death. A mask was like a ball. And then the Red Death came in and killed everybody or whatever. It's, in the plagues in Europe. I mean, who would write about that sort of stuff unless you were really just in need of a psychologist quickly? But he did, and that's why it became so popular, because it was weird stuff. But anyway, because it was weird, I read it. And one of the scenes in that book, I thought, was actually very, very wise. Because he said this was the plagues in Europe when many, many people died. And he envisaged there was a forest somewhere in Europe, and all these demons they met. And the demons were supposed to be the responsible for the plague. And the one said, "How many did you kill in Berlin?" "I killed 200. "How many in Paris?" "400. "How many in London?" "500. "How many in Rome?" He said, "I only killed 10. And fear killed 1,000. And I remember something like that, and I thought, wow, that guy actually knew the nature of the human mind. How fear kills more people than diseases do. Fear is one of the biggest causes of cancer. Fear. Fear causes those early deaths. "I'm afraid it's going to happen to me." And of course, the fear is what kills. The opposite is courage. You can do it. It doesn't matter. Just courage is the opposite of fear. Fear is looking into the future with a negative mind. Courage is looking into the future with a positive mind. Yeah, you can do this. See what happens. Why not? It happens to other people. Why not you? And that courage to look forward with positivity is a brilliant way of facing death, because you actually put off death by being courageous about it. Being negative, being afraid, that is what kills people. Now we're going to go into, because I've got to be quick, into, same with when you visit people in hospital, just encourage them. I mean, not to die, I mean, encourage them to, "You can do this." Come on, you just go back to your bedside of your mother and say, "Die, die, 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 get a chant going, die." That would be terrible. You get kicked out of the hospital for that. But isn't it true that you go to football matches or cricket matches or tennis matches, and when the crowd's really behind you, it's called encouragement. And it does give you that courage to raise your game and to achieve things which you're not supposed to achieve. I mean, you always see that in sports matches. People who shouldn't win, do win. And people who shouldn't lose, like the Dockers, keep on losing. The Dockers is a football team over here in Perth, by the way, for those overseas. But encouragement is just so important for people. And encourage people to live. Why are you afraid of living? Because it hurts. Because I'm old, I'm sick, I'm tired. No, just encourage. There's a lot to still experience in this world. There's a lot still to feel and to know and to understand. So why not just encourage people? Just you can sit in hospital bed, listen to some old jokes by Ajahn Brahm, some nice Dhamma teachings, learn how to meditate. So much you can do, even if you know that you are bedridden. Your body can be bedridden, but your mind doesn't need to be. Your mind can flow all over the world. You can explore all the greatest ideas to centuries past. It's amazing just what the mind can do. Even though the body is stuck in a hospital bed, let the mind fly. It's got the wings. It doesn't need the body. And if you think like that, you're encouraging people. And you find when you encourage people like that, you give them the courage, not the fear. It's amazing what that does. That gives you energy. That gives you life. Fear is death. Courage is life. And if you have the courage in your life to do things, get out of things, you tend to live a long time. If you fear, you bring in early death. So don't be afraid. Have the courage. And anyway, how many times have I told you here? Here you die, you come back again, have another go. It's really unfair if you only have one shot at this life. Even though buying a lottery ticket, if you don't win this week, you can buy another lottery ticket next week. If the Dockers get to the bottom this time round, they can always have another go next year and try again. That's what life is like. It always goes round and round. It's recycling. You get recycled too after death. You come back again, have another try, see if you can do it better next time. So you don't have to be so worried. That's wonderful. If only people would understand about rebirth, reincarnation, we wouldn't be so afraid of death. We just say, here we go, yeah, worn out old car, let's get another one. And also, with that simile of reincarnation, what type of body are you going to get next time? What do you want? Just like the car you have now. Anyone thinking of getting a new one, a new model? Of course, what model would you like to get next time? Depends on how much money you've got. If you've got a lot of money, you can get a Ferrari. If you haven't got much, you just get an old bomb. So, that's just like reincarnation and karma. If you've been very good, if you've joined the Buddhist Society of Western Australia and paid up your membership subscriptions, if you've served on the committee like our president and done lots of good karma, then your next life will be in a Ferrari of a body. But if you just come here and never given a donation in the box, you've never joined up, you've never gone to Dharmasara Nuns Monastery for the entry to the rains day on Sunday because you're too lazy and too stingy, your next life is going to be not even a car, not even a bicycle, you get a skateboard. So that's karma and how it works. But you always have another go. So that's a wonderful, nice thing about life. So you don't have to be afraid of death. Now, meditation. So often people are not courageous in their meditation. They don't use the wisdom and the kindness. Now, courage is so different than willpower. Courageous people are not necessarily strong-willed people. In fact, you find the strong-willed people, when put in difficult situations, they're the ones who buckle. They're the ones who turn out to be the so-called cowards, the strong-willed people. And there's a reason for that. Because strong-willed people are control freaks, and life comes into situations when you can't control and people don't know what to do. That becomes the cowards. But those who've got compassion and wisdom, they're going on a totally different engine. What fuels them and pushes them forward is not just this willpower anymore, it's like wisdom power and kindness power. And wisdom power and kindness power, especially like compassion, that turns ordinary people into these beautiful heroes. It's out of kindness that somebody jumps in front of the car and just catches the little kid and just jumps out of the way again. The heroes, it's out of kindness. It's never out of willpower. So this is actually why, even in meditation, so often that people use willpower instead of courage to meditate. The courage is to sit here, let go and see what happens. That takes a lot of courage to stop controlling things. And instead have this beautiful kindness to the moment. Courage is part of letting go. To let go of all these things you're attached to, all the way you brush your teeth in the morning, all the way you think you should live your life, to do something a little bit different. To let go a little bit takes a huge amount of courage. And this is what we're actually learning when we're meditating. See what it's like when I take away all of the controls of my mind and just sit here, see what happens. That takes a lot of courage. But the marvelous thing is, when you are courageous enough to let go in life, in death, in meditation,
beautiful things happen to you. It's part of my training as a monk. We're always taught to let go. The whole life tends to let us go. After 5 years as a monk, I had to let go of the monastery. They kicked me out. It wasn't so because I was misbehaving, because everyone had to do this. After 5 years, off you go, wandering around. Now that was a bit scary. I had no support mechanism, no home, no mobile phone. Just walking and see what happens next. And you know, that was very scary the first few days, going out of this monastery where you'd lived for 5 or 6 years, fending for yourself, see what happens. But after 2 or 3 days, that was the most beautiful time of my life. Everything I owned, I had on my back, just a bowl, an umbrella, mosquito net, and a bag just with toiletries, and that was about it. So free. I had no debts, no possessions, no family, absolutely nothing. It was like a bird flying out of the nest, free at last. Every crossroads I got to, I could go left, right, straight ahead, or just turn around and go back again. I had no destination, no appointments, no schedule, no place I needed to be or people I needed to meet. Ah, that was just so scary, but just so beautifully free. And it was a wonderful feeling. At last, as a human being, you could go wherever you wanted. As for food, any village I went to, it was Thailand, so they would feed you. Maybe not be much, but enough to keep going for the next day. And any place I wanted to lay down and sleep, I was used to sleeping on the floor. I didn't need a bed or even a mattress or even a swag. You could just sit down on the grass or get some leaves from the forest. Sit down or lay down and just sleep like an animal would sleep. Beautiful and free. And in the cold season, the ground was warm. Much warmer. You didn't need electric blankets because the ground had soaked up the sun during the day. And sometimes I'd be sitting there in the jungle on the ground with my mosquito net, watching all the snakes slither by. Beautiful snakes with wonderful markings. And because I wasn't scared, they never actually bothered me. You can just lay down there and just watch them come by, go about their business. I wasn't their dinner and they weren't my dinner, so we just lived together peacefully. It was a beautiful time of my life. So free. That took courage. But when you did that courage and letting go, oh, you just had such benefits afterwards. And those were physical trainings, which later on when you meditate, to let go. It takes courage to let go of your past. All that stuff which you keep carrying around, all the things which people did to you, or the things you did to them. Sometimes, if you look at it and balance it all out, it's fair, fair. Yeah, well, they did this to me, but I did that to somebody else. So, in the end, fair, fair. So it balances out, so it should become level and zero. Blame and guilt is a zero-sum game. Is it? Or has other people hurt you more than you've hurt others? If you actually look in the big picture, it's usually fair, fair. It's karma. So we can sum it all up to zero, so we don't have to bother about it. We can let it go. But that takes courage to let go of the past. Because we think, if we don't let go of the past, what can define us in the present? A lot of people get defined by what happened to them in the past. They're the victim. They are the guilty party. Why can't we let that go? Because we're too afraid to. So in meditation we have the beautiful courage, the wisdom and the kindness to try it. Just like I had to try letting go of all of my possessions and walk out of the monastery and be free. Beautiful experience. I recommend walking out of the prison of your past. Simple as that. Just walking out and feeling this beautiful sense of freedom. It's scary at first. Have the courage, the wisdom, compassion, and you'll find, wow, free at last. Ooh. woohoo. And that's what you're doing in meditation. But you really get into deep meditation, that's when it gets really scary. For those of you who want to get into the real deep, when the beautiful lights come up in the mind, when you see this incredible stuff, when you're starting to disappear, you, everything you ever thought you were vanishes. Ah, where am I gone? Who cares? I'm very glad to be gone. The more I disappear, the better, I think. So, it feels much better. It takes a lot of courage. So, there does come a time, it's not really the right time to talk about it now, but in the deep meditations, which will happen to you sometimes just by chance. You don't really think you can meditate, but it happens. And there you are sitting there, blissing out, beautiful lights in the mind, things vanishing all over the place. Woohoo! Be courageous enough to see where this leads. Because if you ever want to find truth and meaning in life, that takes some of the biggest amount of courage. Because so many of us are in denial about who we are, what life is. We're trying to make it something different to what it really is. It takes courage to admit the reality of this life. But I guarantee that once you actually see what this life really is, it's not as scary as you think. In fact, it's beautiful. So you don't need to keep running away from life into all this busyness. People keep saying we're too busy. I'm a culprit. But I know sometimes that people are busy, they don't really need to be. It's just a way of escaping, running away by doing stuff. So be courageous enough on this weekend to have 1 hour. Okay, half an hour. Okay, 5 minutes of not being busy. I challenge you. 5 minutes of not being busy. I don't mean just physically, with your mind as well. Just staying here, nothing to do. I'm not going to do anything for 5 minutes. I'm going to be totally lazy. Can you do that? Sounds easy, doesn't it? But so difficult because you feel guilty of all these things. All these things which you promised to do. All these things which you should be doing. Who said you should be doing it? Sometimes when they said, you should be doing this, Ajahn Brahma said, who said? Why you should be doing this stuff? No, no, just learn how to relax and let go and be not busy. Because all that is a lot of escapism. Even when you're meditating, why are you thinking so much? Just another way to escape from being still. It takes a lot of courage to be peaceful. And it also takes a lot of courage to see the truth. We always like just to be told what to believe. That's why we have all these religions. They tell you what to believe. I trust Ajahn Brahm. He says it this way. He says it that way. Well, that must be true. A person a long time ago, don't believe anything I say. And he believed that. So... That just messes around with your mind, your poor brain. You go round and round with such statements. But in the end, have courage to see things for yourself. To be an individual. To actually to see the truth as it appears to you right now. It's one of my favorite sayings. Never ever allow your learning, even what you learn here, what you learn in university, what you learn from reading books, what you learn from life. Never ever allow your learning to stand in the way of truth. Truth is something different than learning. Never allow your learning to stand in the way of truth. That takes courage. That's why sometimes some say doctors, they look at a patient, everything they've ever learned, everything they've ever been told, all in the books, says they should do this. But they know, no, that's not right. Something tells them that the truth is different than everything they've ever been learned. It takes a lot of courage to go against what you're supposed to do. As a counsellor, sometimes I do that. Sometimes I break all the rules of what a counsellor should do. All my learning, all my training, out the window, to see the truth. How much in life is that the case for you? all your learning has actually blocked the truth. That's why you have so much courage needed to let all this stuff go, so you can see. In this moment, the truth, you can't capture the truth like people try and do. What is the truth? Capture it, write it all down, write a book, start a religion. That's capturing the truth. You can't capture the truth. It's like trying to capture the air. There's one day someone's going to do this. Actually, they've already done it, apparently. All these ideas I had years ago, somebody listens to this and makes a fortune out of it. They've actually bottled, I think, Australian air, and they've sold it in Beijing or somewhere. Really polluted. That's crazy stuff. Bottling air and selling it. Crikey, what's the world coming to? Anywhere. So you can own the air, and probably actually they'll be charging us to breathe the air next. The government will put a tax on it. Tell that to Mr. Morrison, a new tax on the air. To balance the budget. So I don't know what they're going to do. Anyway, never allow your learning to stand in the way of truth. The truth is free. You can't bottle it. You can't sell it. So that takes a lot of courage to do that. That's why anyone who really needs or wants to understand truth needs to have an immense amount of courage. Wisdom and kindness coming together to form this ability to let go and embrace things rather than pushing things away. The way of courage. Thank you all for listening. Sadhu, sadhu. Okay, come on, it's been a long time since I've been here. Three proper sadhus. Okay, one, two, three. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Much more fun. Put some energy into life. Okay, we've got some questions here. This is why I get into trouble. Find out what I've said, which has offended somebody. How can I have more courage to face the truth during meditation? From Malaysia. Number one, listen to more of my talks. Get brainwashed to be encouraged. And also, learn from wisdom and kindness how to let go. Let go more and more. And then you find the truth of your body, where it aches, where it hurts, and also you find the truth of your mind. I said this to some when I was teaching a retreat. In Thailand, as a monk with Ajahn Chah, we didn't wear shoes or sandals a lot of the time. And so walking through the jungles, we were always stubbing our toes or piercing our soles of our feet with the roots and other stuff in the forest. We always had our feet bandaged with so many band-aids. When Ajahn Chah saw this, he said, why on earth are Westerners always cutting themselves on the forest floor because they didn't wear any shoes? And he said, it's because you Westerners have got stupid feet. I never realized you could apply the word stupid to a foot. But it was actually absolutely accurate. Always up in our head thinking about the meaning of life while we're treading on thorns and stuff and piercing our feet and making them bleed. It was stupid feet. So sometimes to face the truth during meditation, you know, we make sure that our body is wise, not stupid. Feel the body, be aware of it instead of thinking about it. And when you can actually feel the body, like I was teaching in this meditation, we get wisdom of our body, truth of how our body actually is, how it feels. Like as for me, I was really amazed. You know, people say I'm fat. Actually, I found out when I read in a book. It's another one of Ajahn Bob's bad jokes. When I read in a book about anorexia, the definition of anorexia was that you look in a mirror and you think you're fat. And I realized, that's what I've got. That's me. That is delusion, I agree. But to face the truth of your body, first of all, how it is. And then when you face the truth of the body, then you can face the truth of the mind. So be aware of how the body feels. Then be aware of how the mind feels. How the mind actually is.
And then you can actually learn how to relax it. Courage takes a lot of mindfulness and letting go and kindness. From England, dear Bhante, the UK is facing great political turmoil and increased racism since voting to leave the EU. How can we develop courage to challenge the wrong behaviour in public? I can't tell you how that courage is going to actually manifest in your life. But when you're really courageous, you have this beautiful sense of being adventurous, doing things which other people haven't done. So that's why when I was in Sydney, when there was that Muslim girl who was abused on a bus, and I think that somebody started like a hashtag of ride with a Muslim or something. I'll ride with you, yeah. And they did something innovative. Now that was courageous because they were thinking outside the box, doing something different, doing something new. And that is actually how the courage, seeing something different way, a different way to brush your teeth, different side of the mouth to start from, that is actually what courage really is. It innovates, it sees new things, it tries new things. So on how that will actually happen over in the UK with racism, I don't know, you may sort of, I know sometimes that men dress up as women, maybe the people in the UK or the white English people can put a turban on. I don't know, just thinking outside the box. So, cross-dress as an Asian, or if you're Western, or cross, I don't know. Do something which is a little bit different, outside the box. So in other words, that way, or just go and visit the mosque. Whatever it is. Something which is out of the box, courageous, which other people don't usually do, which actually just makes a point. They know that racism, this is so powerful in Buddhism. As Buddhists, that we don't at all judge a person from their race, their background, their wealth. We don't judge them at all, except maybe on their behavior. If they're a good person, a kind person, a moral person, they're wonderful. They're my friend. I don't care who you are, what religion, what race. It's on how good you are, how kind you are. If we're going to judge at all, that's how we judge. And even there, people are at different levels of development. So some people are really kind because they've been around a long time. Some people aren't so kind. They're still learning the tricks of compassion. Some people are very virtuous because they've been human beings a long time. Some people are just still getting the understanding of the meaning of virtue. So we don't even judge good people and bad people either. That's great when you go in prisons and see all these murderers and paedophiles and you don't judge them. Do you judge a paedophile? Are you judging them? They made terrible mistakes? Doesn't help, you know. Obviously, make sure they don't do any harm again. But don't judge people like that. They're not a paedophile, they're a person who's done a paedophilic act. Don't stigmatize them like sometimes we stigmatize people who've got some other disabilities. Mental disabilities, physical disabilities. You should never stigmatize people like that. They're much bigger than what you see. So that way is one way that by being courageous, the political turmoil, there's always political turmoil, if it wasn't turmoil, it wouldn't be politics. So, but it sort of goes down and it comes up again and it goes down again. Look, I used to live in England, there used to be turmoil there before, but we get past it. Honestly, I told this to some of the monks, when I was a young man, I was disgusted by this. As many young kids, they were called, not punks, skinheads. They're called skinheads, just like me. They use the same fashion, but they weren't monks. They're called skinheads. And this is what they used to do. They used to go what they call paki bashing. And what that meant was finding a Pakistani immigrant and beating them up. And that was what was happening when I was a young kid. They thought it was good fun. So there was racism then, very bad racism. But after a while, the police intervened and made sure that that was, you know, punished as it should be. And so that Pakistani bashing, that was actually stopped. So we do have times when it's racism and times when the ordinary people actually come up and they make sure that doesn't happen again. So yeah, it is a problem there, but be courageous, be innovative. Don't just wait for someone else to fix the problem. See if you can fix it in your small way. Anyway, the last question, how can I have the courage to always speak the truth? I've lost opportunities and friends by being honest. If those are the friends you've lost by being honest, they're not really friends which you know, should worry about losing. There's always some friends, when you're really honest with them, they can say what they say, you can say what you say, and you're respected. You don't have to be perfect. You can make mistakes, and that's what a friend is there. They know you make mistakes. They accept you make mistakes. You're a human being. Welcome. It's wonderful when you can have a person you can share with like that. Not just tell all the wonderful things about yourself, but all the stupid things about yourself as well. All the bad things about yourself. And you can share it with someone. You can actually be honest and open up. Such a beautiful thing to be able to do. So, always, if you can, find a couple of friends you can speak the truth with. And they're real friends. And value those. And when they speak the truth to you, even if you don't like it, just value it, because you know, they just don't want to hurt, but sometimes you need to tell the truth to get it off your chest. So anyway, the other way is always use the right time and place to tell the truth. And sometimes say it in a nice way. Right time and place, you don't go blurt it out when your husband comes home from work that you've overspent on the credit card. Give him a cup of tea first of all, give him a nice meal, soften him up, and then hit him with the news. So sometimes it's because people use the wrong time and place. Okay, Nicole has got the microphone. There's any questions from the floor about courage? Okay, great, because it's 9 o'clock and it's over time again. But we're not going to charge you any extra tonight, because there's no extra, there's no charge anyway. So okay, so we now can pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, and then we can do whatever we need to do.
Arahant Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivadeni Suvakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami.
Very good.